Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1/1/23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi folks, welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, here to continue the positional reviews today, and we're going to talk about cornerback today with Mike Fast. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you again, Mike, The Ravens had the worst pass defense in the entire NFL as measured by passer rating against, and probably by some other metrics as well, but by passer rating again, obviously quite bad. The problems were not all at cornerback, but the problems were certainly very significant at cornerback. They started before the first game was even played with the injury to Marcus Peters.
Yeah, and that was something that you kind of knew they couldn't afford with all the offensive injuries going down. And it's funny how the offense impacts the defense, where, you know, look, we're going to be behind, or the Ravens are going to be behind, or at least have to battle more than they're used to and have less wiggle room, so to speak, on defense. You can't afford to lose a great corner like Peters. And as we saw throughout the season, that just has a horrible ripple effect.
It really does. I mean, that's a good point, Mike, that if you are consistently leading in games like the 19 and 20 Ravens were, particularly early in the season, you don't have to play a whole lot of base defense. I mean, the 2019 Ravens played only, I think, 10.6% base defense, and they played 13.2% race car, four outside linebackers. So very, different kind of perspective on the game to get to play all that dime, all that race car, instead of playing your base defense. And it's quite an advantage, and it helps all your rotation. It helps the players who are getting tired not play as many snaps, because that's mostly a defensive line phenomenon, to be able to, mm-hmm. to play some of these lighter packages.
Yeah, exactly. And when you have guys that are not only not talking about like the younger guys, but also the veterans who are just not used to playing certain situations. Like, for example, the Bengals game at home pops out to me, where Marlon Humphrey was kind of, it's funny, I was tracking it, that he was against, I think, Jamar Chase for all but three of the snaps in the first half. And before that big slant at the end, Jamar Chase, I think, had one catch for 9 yards. So they were pretty comfortable in that. But once that was kind of a microcosm of the whole season, where once the cracks started to come in that secondary, the opposing offenses knew that, and they really went after him, whether it be Marlon Humphrey, whether it be a Jimmy Smith or a big name, so to speak. No one was safe, really. So
right.
That was something that they seemed to never be able to recover from.
Yeah, I agree. And it definitely was not just at cornerback. They picked on the inside linebackers like nobody's business this year. And we just talked in the last show, it was actually about the defensive line, but how much the safeties had to change their assignments this year to make up for a really weak inside linebacker core in terms of coverage. I mean, none of them have real skills. Bynes has a little bit of recognition skills. Board is not a particularly good cover guy. Queen is a terrible cover guy, as we've talked about a lot on this show. And Harrison had a really bad coverage year, whether or not the guy can recover or not. But none of them have any idea other than Bynes about what's going on between level two and level three. And that really puts a big stress on your safeties. So, games mm-hmm. like where Jamar Chase is in town, where they're stacking coverage against him, they're really stacking a safety over the top. They're giving him the Randy Moss treatment, as we would otherwise maybe say. You just can't do that as often when your inside linebackers are so weak and the middle of the field is in such need of help.
Yeah, and I would love to be in the meeting room with Wink Martindale as the season progressed, because it's just got to be so fascinating. What do you do? Like, even if you had a few less injuries, so if you want to take guys out of the pass rush to mm-hmm. kind of help out with the intermediate or a certain part of the field the defense is attacking, well, that gives the quarterback more time. Where if you commit a defensive back to a blitz, obviously that's going to lessen your chances. And, generally the defensive backs are one of their strengths, before this year, they're pretty good blitzers. So you don't want to just completely ignore that and completely give up, but it's so fragile, I think, is the word where that I think best describes Wink Martindale's margin of error, where he has to be aggressive because that's what you built your whole program on. And especially when you're behind, you have to go for the turnover. But if you're too aggressive, it's going to get ugly real quick. So that's something where I think they're going to address in this draft, is going to look for a pass coverage linebacker like the Buccaneers seem to have found.
Okay, so I want to come back to that question at point for a second, because for 40 years in baseball, very aggressively, sabermetricians have been trying to pull apart the impacts of pitching and defense. But very similar to what you just said about the pass rush and the coverage, it's almost impossible to take those two apart in terms of what they pass rush impacts coverage impacts pass rush. They both have a tremendous impact. And like, how to optimize that is a really tough question. The Ravens have some good versatile pieces in terms of doing both. When you got Clark and Elliott and Bowser, certainly in terms of being a coverage drop, and Matt Judon the year before and whatnot. I mean, they've had assets that can really help you be flexible and be disguised about what you're attempting to do with the line of scrimmage. It's just maybe not quite enough. What was short for me this year, I want to go back to Marcus Peters now for a moment and just say, you know, they lost their big interception threat. And I think that really was it might have had a bigger impact on interceptions than just the interceptions he had, because his ability to gamble on an island is very good. Obviously, one of the things about Marcus Peters, yes, he's a gambler. He's a great gambler. I mean, he's the card counter that offenses want to avoid in terms of having, you know, taking chances to his zone on the field. He baits the quarterback, marionettes the quarterback a lot of the time, and you know, the Ravens missed that in no uncertain terms this year, and you know, it's just I don't know that you can really make up for it. I think it impacted other areas of the defense where they had to cover for the cornerbacks.
Yeah, that's a great point, Ken. And you saw it was so one of the very frustrating things following the Ravens is how low their turnovers were. And even when in previous years when they would give up points or not have the best game or the best win-loss record, they would always turn the football over. They would cause turnovers. And this year they were pretty low in that department, and rightly said with Marcus Peters, whether he got the interception himself or allowed a teammate to get it, his losing his presence was real tough. And guys would seem like they weren't quite sure. Maybe they knew the landmark to get to, or they knew the coverage, what they were supposed to do, but they were kind of just missing, I don't want to say confidence, but they were just missing something, where if Marcus Peters is there, they give you, it's like that subconscious kind of security blanket, like, all right, we're good. I can play that much more confident, take that much more of a risk because I know he's got me, or I know I can read this. If I'm a safety, I can read this out and then get over top of Marcus because he's got his guy covered. Like you said, it's more than just corners. It's more than just Marcus Peters. But his loss was the first big step, the first kind of big shooter drop. And then it just seemed like every week another one, they just were just losing a little bit of steam and slid like quicksand. And, you know, it was hard to watch after a while.
Okay, so let's go through the other corners one at a time here. Marlon Humphrey did not have the sort of year he had when he was active. He had one really bad game. And in fact, every Ravens corners, even the good ones, had a trip to the bathroom this year. There's no doubt about that. And Marlon Humphrey in that first Cincinnati game was pretty terrible. You mentioned that he was good for a while against Chase. He had an interception late in that game. I think he maybe forced a fumble that went out of bounds too. I'm trying to think of what he might have done in that game, but he definitely had plays in a game where he gave up approximately 200 yards in total to Jamar Chase and company. But he's a guy who lost a lot of his peanut punch results this year.
Yeah, and that is something that I was a little surprised at, to be honest with you. I thought that when he was in that game, obviously the Jamar Chase first half touchdown was huge. But I think where they really, not just with the yardage and points, but just psychologically, where the Bengals just completely took over that game and really that division was when CJ Uzomah just took him for a ride in the second half. And Marlon traditionally, you know, you can speak more to this than I can, but I generally don't think he matches up on tight ends that often. So it seems like it was not that he couldn't do it. Obviously, he didn't execute on that play, but it seemed like that was a little odd. And then in the Pittsburgh game, and I believe it's Deontay Johnson where he got hurt, that was something where you would have maybe liked to see a Tavon Young on him or maybe someone a little bit quicker. Now, for all of his injuries and his missed plays, he did lead the team in passes defensed with only 12 games played. So he's not going anywhere in terms of his playmaking ability. It's just, I think, again, with that Marcus Peters point, maybe just a little wrinkle. Everybody, Marlon included, has to do a little something different. And in conjunction with the linebacker woes, I think he's your best cover guy. But then sometimes the bigger guy wins and it just snowballs from there.
One of the things I want to see them do with Marlon is try and keep him on the outside. And I know he's been effective in the slot, so it seems like weird that the Ravens just didn't use him wherever they need him. But I want the Ravens to develop another slot corner. He's an aircraft carrier, still not the greatest change of direction skills, even though, you know, certainly not up to elite slot corner level in terms of change of direction skills. More of a boundary guy, and also being the kind of hitter he is in terms of contact with the football with those baseball bat arms after the ball is caught or after the ball is as the ball is being secured, that has more value on the outside than it does on the inside. It's more difficult, I think, to make that hit on a receiver in a punch out manner than it is on the outside where you have the boundary to help. So I think that's kind of a big deal. And I think he's been more effective out there. I really want to see him on the outside again. And the Ravens need, from my way of thinking, another smaller cornerback for the slot. It's not their bent to go for these smaller guys, but they probably do need a guy who focuses on change of direction. Maybe Ardarius Washington is that guy, or maybe it's somebody else.
Yeah, maybe. And I think, and we'll get to this, but I think there's a perfect guy in the draft that screams Ravens. But yeah, you're totally right about that. And I'm looking at this box score now from the Bengals game, which was kind of the catalyst for kind of the Ravens' real downfall. And it doesn't – okay, so Deshaun Elliott was the guy who usually might work on those tight ends or cover slot receiver or pick him up at times. But anyway, yeah, I think Marlon is – tailor-made for the outside, and his game screams in those tight quarters, like you said, in the boundary, which for those who don't know, it's the short side of the field. This is another word for it. I think Marlon is just such a natural there and can use his ball skills. And if he's going against a quicker guy, or if he is being asked to do that, there's less room. So it's more he's more in a phone booth type setting, if you will. So I think Marlon is great for that. So I don't know if the Ravens have that new slot guy. I mean, obviously Tavon Young is good, but like in this NFL, like you need more than a couple pass rushers. You need more than a couple slot corners now. So I think they're going to be looking at that in the draft for sure.
Yeah, that's another thing about the position that I really don't like for Humphrey is he's going to go after the quarterback some as a slot corner, or if he doesn't, he takes away from your scheme. He's obviously more involved in stopping the run game when he's in the slot, and it's not a matter that he's not a great physical player. He's a hell of a physical player. He's the toughest guy probably in the Ravens secondary, in the Ravens cornerbacks room anyway. But I still don't want him involved in a ton of run plays. If you go back and look at the 2000 Ravens and Dwayne Starks and Chris McAllister, despite both of them being happy to throw their bodies around, they won't do it on run plays, and it's because they've been told not to. It's really clear if you watch that tape. And I think that was really successful, obviously, for that team, keeping those guys healthy and having them being a big part of the playoff run. And with Humphrey, I hope that they can, not just with him, but with him, keep those guys on the outside healthy by not getting them involved in run defense.
And you don't want – this is not – I'm definitely not saying he's fragile or anything like that, but you don't want to take a chance. So I think it's kind of like similar – there's a parallel to the Lamar situation where he can – like he's shown 20 carries a game or 10 or 12. Like so far – what he got hurt on at Cleveland was a pass play. So it's not to say he can't handle it. It's just you don't want to take a risk with someone you've invested so much in. At the same time, you would hope that – I think the last time we were on a podcast together, we talked about you don't want a defensive back having to make many tackles. So that means the runner is getting either way outside your box or getting deep down the field. So that's not good. So absolutely, I think you're spot on with that.
All right, let's move on. We'll talk about Anthony Averett a little bit, the guy who really stepped up for the Ravens this year. Obviously, his loss was just heartbreaking towards the end of the year for a lot of reasons. I mean, he's in a contract year, and this is an opportunity for him to make some money, get the financial security he no doubt wants. The Ravens, he may or may not be available to the Ravens in some capacity this next year. I would have thought that at midseason and shortly thereafter that he might have been looking at close to $10 million a year. Now I'm not sure. I really don't know what the market is for Anthony Averett. Couple of bad games this year. It seemed like when teams focused on beating him at the top of the route, they did a pretty good job. Indianapolis, and it honestly didn't matter who, Pittman or Pascal. They had another guy in there too that I'm forgetting his name, but you know, receivers that were moved in from the boundary, basically to the numbers. So he's not playing outside the numbers. He has more trouble at the top of the route. It may be a confidence thing. It may be a learned, you know, processing thing. So it's certainly something Anthony Averett should be working on this offseason, in addition to the rehab, is trying to improve his top of the route skills.
And that's something that's so hard for any defensive back. It just so happens that Averett probably got his most playing time of all so far in his young career this year. So that's something, yeah, it definitely is going to come with experience. And, you know, like he had a really good game against the Chiefs, against a guy like Tyreek Hill, who he wasn't on exclusively, I don't believe. But that's a very, very experienced passing attack top to bottom, and he had a good game against them. Whereas, you know, the Colts are a good team and they have good players, but if you were to ask anybody who would be a harder team to defend, you would say Kansas City. So, you know, he has it in him. Now it's just a matter of kind of cutting down on those mistakes, not relying so much on others, and just going out and kind of compartmentalizing in every play, every drive, saying, who do I have? And knowing tendencies too. And a lot of times at the top of a route where people get fooled is a double move. Usually option routes where it's built in, where a player has a couple ways to go on a route, those are usually not so deep. They're usually at or near the line of scrimmage. Whereas if Averett is getting fooled at the top of a route on, let's say, a third down, it's usually 10 to 12 yards and beyond. So maybe he can, obviously, I don't know what their scheme is exactly, but I would think that if he can study, okay, I'm going against Michael Pittman this week, and I know that if it's 3rd and 8+ or whatever, he likes to go one of two ways. And again, all your preparation, like we've talked about before, it's all probability anyway. You never truly know what they're going to do until they do it. So I would just hope that, and I'm sure that he'll work on this, where he just look at the tendencies, fixate on them, and just know, all right, this is what I have. If he goes here, or if he his release stems this way, I know where to go, and so forth. So I'm not concerned about him in terms of him closing the gap on his mistakes, but it is frustrating from the standpoint that he had started so well. And especially when the Ravens needed someone to step up at corner, he kind of, you know, I think I forget what his injury was now, but he couldn't finish the season the way he wanted.
Yeah, he led the Ravens cornerbacks in snaps with 807 this year. In fact, he was fourth on the whole defense in terms of snaps. Only Queen, Clark, and Bowser played more, and Queen and Bowser were just a few more snaps. Clark played every snap pretty much, and of course he's the he's the green dot wearer. But this is fourth year, and he really has progressed exactly as you could hope for a fourth round pick into a very solid starter in his fourth season. And you know, had obviously shown flashes before that, starting with his rookie year with about 65 snaps then. But there's nothing about his development that I'd say should have held him back. He's an up-and-coming defensive back in this league, or at least he was until the injury. We still hope that's true. I want to address one thing you said about tendencies. I think that tendencies are important. And look, understanding, you know, what the guy might do more often than not is one thing. I also want him to work on reading that leverage. And some of that I know is processing speed, that I might be asking him to do things that are at a different level of ability. Like nobody's going to read leverage like Lamar Jackson does, or like Muhammad Ali did. I mean, just asking a boxer or a quarterback to do that just doesn't make any sense. It's outside of people's skill set. But he does need to look for those tendencies, not the ones on paper that says he'll go to the boundary 30% of the time and he'll cut to the inside 70% of the time. He needs to look at the tells from that receiver of what's giving it away in terms of when he's going inside or outside. And I want him to figure that out. The more he can learn generally, the better. And I would hope that this is something that he can do on a low intensity basis to really make the most of his positional training this offseason. And some players just really value their time off. You know, they want to go clubbing. They want to go to Las Vegas. They want to spend time with girls. They want to, you know, do all of the things that young men like to do. But, you know, when you're playing football, it's a 12-month a year job right now. And I would hate that he'd be spending time on an internship for a broadcast career when he could be, spending it trying to figure out how to be a better cornerback and the millions and millions of dollars that will affect him in the coming years.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the best way to do what you just said is to get in-person reps, or at least be on the field in person. Because even with the All-22 film angle, you can only get so much of a read on a guy in his body lean. And even like if the Ravens were running just in helmets and he was behind the defensive backfield, but he could read the receiver. Even when he wasn't in an active rep, he could see so much more than what you can see on film. So really won't get a chance to do that for another three and a half months or so, maybe 4 months, depending on if they can go back all in person for OTAs and stuff. So that's going to take a while. And I think he'll get there. That's just my instinct, because I think the way he was coached at Alabama, and it seems like what he wants to do, like it seems to me like he is still, he's nowhere close to what he wants to accomplish, what he has in the NFL yet. So I think he's on his way. So I think he'll get there, but he does surely have work to do, but I don't think he can do it until he gets back in person.
All right, let's. We got to move on here and go a little faster pace. I'm sorry to do this to you, but Tavon Young, 550 snaps, played incredibly all 17 games. And one of the things that Tavon, I'm sure, wanted to do as much as anything else was to play all 16 games, all 17 games, and he did. He's a guy who I thought was certainly very good at times. The overall passer rating is not particularly good. It's well over 100. For him, so I still think he's the best guy in terms of changing direction in the slot, but I don't think there's any way the Ravens can pass up trimming $5.85 million of cap space by cutting him this year. So they may be able to bring him back on a lesser deal, or it may just be the year they have to say goodbye to Tavon Young.
Yeah, and that's going to be one of the big keys for the Ravens, and I think that they should definitely keep him. In my opinion, they have to figure out a way to keep him, because you're already looking for, like we talked about before, ideally to add another slot player. Well, he's finally come back from the injuries, battled back, and shown that he can be a force. You know, he had, I think, 4 tackles for loss, including 2 sacks from a defensive back. That's pretty good.
He's always
good
been a good slot blitzer. But let me simplify this entire question for you, Mike. How much are you willing to pay for Tavon Young, given the risk of injury that has shown itself over the last few years? Just give me a 1-year figure in terms of you can incentivize this if you want to go, which I think is probably the way it would end up.
I think if you want to give him between, I would say my max would be $6 million.
Okay, I mean he's only making $5.845 million under the cap, so you can keep him for that.
Yeah, so I think somewhere around that would be the max.
Okay, I would say more like $1.5 million with incentives to $4 million. That's where I would go on this. I mean, I think he's, I do not think there is a market for Tavon Young. I think he's basically radioactive in terms of the injury risk at this point. And getting through 17 games, that'll help him in terms of having some market. But I don't think there's a team other than the Ravens who are really all that excited about him. And I wouldn't have a problem. I mean, he's been a career Raven, and you know, when he's been able to be on the field, he's been a very good player. But I don't think I could go over an incentivized deal that was any higher than that for him.
Yeah, that's going to be something that is definitely going to work against him from a leverage standpoint. But, you know, it is what it is. They got to make hard decisions every year.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, let's keep going on here because we got a large group to get through. Chris Westry looked good at times during this year, and certainly appeared to be a player who was on the rise. It wasn't perfect by any stretch, but love that length at corner that he gives the Ravens.
Yeah, and that's something that you got to be excited about as a Ravens fan. Obviously, was it at Cincinnati? He gave up that really long pass, and that was a big mistake that he knew right away he made. You just have to, though, I think, see the bigger picture, and especially given the conversation we just had, even though they're different types of corners, Chris Westry represents a big corner that is going to be cheap for right now and is just getting started, and he already made plays when he didn't have a lot of time to get up to speed. And for the most part, he handled that pretty well. So that's someone that, again, seeing the big picture, you want to be excited about. And I just like his length, especially given the fact that you know now who Ja'Marr Chase is. You know who T. Higgins is. Chase Claypool, for however many years he's going to stay around.
Great matchups for Westry.
Right. And then assuming the Browns bring in someone taller than Jarvis Landry, you got to think, and Andrew Berry now at the helm there in Cleveland, he's going to do a great job in the draft. So those big corners are someone you definitely got to be thankful that you have.
Yeah, Westry to me is one of the building blocks, one of the foundational pieces for the Ravens secondary. And, you know, at least you hope that's the way it turns out, because he's one of the only young guys they got. He's entering year three. This time next year, we might be talking about, can they get Chris Westry signed to a multi-year deal a year early to try and not RFA him, not take the chance of him going to free agency. But you know, he's definitely a player that needs to fit into the Ravens' plans. And I think he'll enter this year probably as no worse than the fourth cornerback. He might be the third cornerback on this team in terms of where they are. I don't think he'll be number two, but we'll see. We'll see about that. It's definitely mathematically possible. It could be him and Humphrey starting the year. So it is what it is. Let's talk about some of the other guys who played the position during the year. We had Jimmy Smith, of course, got 293 snaps, mostly at the end of the year. Was remarkable in terms of his durability finishing up the year. Actually played, I think, very well in terms of his coverage. Did have a little problems in terms of change of direction, getting beat on some whip routes, particularly by Deontay Johnson in week 18, I'm thinking of. But seems to be a player who can still do a little something.
Yeah, and so that's getting to the situation where I think it was him that came out right after the season ended, where he said, I don't want to play anywhere else. Could be mistaken, but I think that was him. And, you know, he's an unrestricted free agent he made $2.5 million this past year. So I don't know what the salary negotiation is going to be like. I have to think, given the current state of the defensive backfield, given how he's played with the Ravens so long, and obviously what he means to the team, I just have to think they bring him back. But at what cost, at how many years? For the play he did make at the end of the season that were good, but again, he's not going to be your starter. He's going to be a reserve player. Will he want to do that?
I don't know. Perfectly happy doing it. I mean, he knows what
okay,
his role
well,
is.
Yeah. Then great. Yeah. Keep him around. Yeah. But I just wonder that, you know, if they draft someone else, I'm assuming they're going to draft one or two D defensive backs. I'm not saying his ego is going to get in the way, but, you know, at the end of the day, when you're going on the last few years of your career, making not that much money, I just have to wonder what that's going to be like for him, who had been such a key player in the defense, and kind of, it seems like all of a sudden, I know it hasn't been this quick, but it seems like all of a sudden he's, you know, playing second fiddle.
Yeah, he becomes important to the Ravens every year, as in he comes in and plays a role where he plays more than expected. You know, I think if he makes $2 million, it might be too much, but that's fine if they want to overpay a little bit for a backup corner. Jimmy Smith is perfectly aware of the business of football at this point in his life. He made a lot of money playing this game. I think right now he's in the same position as McPhee. Levine never made a lot of money, but he's just happy to be here. Josh Bynes is in a similar position. Probably Eric Tomlinson is in a similar position in terms of a guy who knows the Ravens probably have a role for him, but other teams don't. And you know, he's just very appreciative of what the situation is here. I love the Ravens vet roundtable that they have. I think it probably is very positive in terms of leadership components, and it's definitely very positive in terms of what these guys can bring on the field. So I'd be eager to have him back again. I wasn't 100% sure that I would feel this way, but I think he did enough in these last few weeks to make me think, yeah, you know, if it's right player, right price, no problem. I don't think there's another bidder out there. I don't think there's, first of all, he's kind of ruled it out, but I don't think there's another bidder out there who says, okay, you know, we'll give you $2 million with incentives to $5 million. I don't think that deal exists for Jimmy Smith.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think they'll definitely be able to keep him, and I think he'll play a part for sure. I'm just glad that, like Tavon Young, he's back healthy and he has a mental fortitude, obviously, he's shown to battle and just to even try it, because kind of rewind back to when you have an injury, like I've personally never had an injury like that, much less fighting back to get back to being in NFL shape. I have to think when that happens, every step of that rehab process, you just have to wonder if it's worth it. And they've shown that they battled just the mental part, much less getting back on the field and then actually performing well. So like you said, he's very valuable to the team, and I don't think he's going to end up playing for any other team. So I'm just glad that he's back and his mind seems to be in the right place and he's focused. And I think that obviously with less of an impact than Ray Lewis, he has that mindset to, I'm going to just kind of empty the tank and just do whatever I can to get this team to a Super Bowl. We may not make it, but I think we're close, and I'm going to put my body on the line. I'm going to reserve playing time, whatever I have to do, we need to get this done. So I think he's one of those key players that's going to kind of solidify those intangibles for these young players they're molding.
Yeah, three other guys on the roster I don't think have any part of the Ravens in next year: Robert Jackson, Kevon Seymour, Daryl Worley, were emergency fill-in bodies. And, you know, the fact that all three of them were on the field at the same time tells you just about how desperate the Ravens' situation at cornerback was. Seymour did not have a bad game against Pittsburgh, I didn't think, in the last week. Other than that, he was pretty darn bad. Worley was awful when he was in there. Didn't like how he played at all. Robert Jackson had some leverage mistakes. Probably was not any worse than the other two, but he's certainly less experienced. I don't see any of those guys as being back. Worley and Seymour are older players. Worley, I believe, is getting close to 30, and Seymour is 28 and is a free agent, a UFA, not just an RFA. Jackson is, I believe, a younger player, so he may still have time with the Ravens under a cheap deal. Hard for me to say, actually. I do not know exactly where he is. It looks like he's played parts of three seasons with Cleveland for two of them, so he probably has he might be ending an RFA year coming up here, which would be pretty crazy.
Yeah. And I agree. And I just think it's a product of how, again, this Ravens, I've just said ad nauseum, but this Ravens situation, offense and defense, but particularly on the defense, was such an aberration from the injuries. So you have to assume all those guys come back. And the only reason, like you said, these last three we mentioned were playing was because of injury. I wonder if Kevon Seymour, I think he's one of those guys that could start with another team, maybe on the practice squad, get waived, and then midseason the Ravens might pick him back up. Like you said, against Pittsburgh, he had three tackles for loss. So that's pretty incredible. But, yeah, I mean, he's a veteran corner that played with the Ravens and did some good things. And, you know, but the Ravens, the way they're going isn't just okay. Or at least that's where they want to not just be okay. They don't want to just get to the playoffs. They don't want to just participate. They want to be a dominant force. And for them to do that, they have to be very bold and say, look, we're looking for the highest standard we can get, and we're not going to budge off that. And unfortunately, I don't think Seymour's going to be part of that team. Like I said, I'm just trying to be polite.
You're being very polite about it. Unnecessarily nice to give on Seymour about this. Ardarius Washington, one of the guys we didn't talk about. Now, the Ravens, very unusual team. They're built the reverse of most teams. Most teams have too many guys who are slot corner prospects because they're kind of undersized defensive backs and too few of the big length guys for the outside. The Ravens, unbelievably, have all of these aircraft carrier corners who are the size you want and what you want on the outside. They have fewer of the guys at slot corner. So Ardarius Washington and Tavon Young this year. Ardarius Washington, I think, could definitely be a part of the Ravens' future starting this year, potentially as the starting slot corner. But I think they will draft somebody else, and I think they'll try and find that guy. Might be a draft, actually might be a UDFA, because they're going to try and find an undervalued guy to play slot corner for this team, I think.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, we really, I think, were robbed a little bit as Ravens fans of not being able to see what Ardarius Washington can do, because anybody that follows their draft knows that TCU and Washington especially have very, very good defensive backs, like defensive linemen at Ohio State or linebackers at Penn State. TCU has just turned out really solid defensive backs over the last few years, offensive linemen at Notre Dame. So that's the kind of program they have, and Ravens didn't really get to see that out of him. So I think they're definitely going to give him another chance to compete in training camp. And, you know, I think it's interesting also, I know it's not on the team anymore, but now we're on the topic of cornerback Sean Wade. It was interesting. I was researching it during the week preparing for this. They traded him for two picks because they had so much depth, and then ironically they could have used him during the season.
Well, so they could have used him, but they couldn't have kept him, so it's
right.
It doesn't make the trade bad.
It's funny how those things work out. But yeah, Ardarius Washington, I think you make a really good point. And when we get into the draft in a second, I think he plays that position where, you know, yeah, he'll be in the slot, but I like to, and that's not a technical term, but I like how he plays on the hashes and not just, you know, maybe where safeties line up, but he can go forward as opposed to going back or, you know, covering in space in a deep zone. He can play kind of that robber role or support for crossers, you know, like the Bengals like to do or what have you. So I'm really excited to see him get back to full strength and compete.
Although if they could get another slot corner and he's not the starter, he certainly could help in a dime package, because he is more of a hybrid player, and you can easily see him taking one of those two linebacker spots to play a short zone, read the quarterback effectively, and cause all kinds of trouble. Good player. Secondary, obviously a big concern. They've got a lot of guys walking here. We think that Marcus Peters might be gone. We certainly think that Tavon Young might be gone. Anthony Averett you will enter the free agent market, so who knows if he can be retained. And then Jimmy Smith, of course, the perpetually about to retire Raven. you know, what do you do with a group that's older like this? And I think it has to start with the draft. I think they'll certainly have one pick at cornerback. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a first round pick. I know everybody else wants, I want a pass rusher, I want an offensive tackle, and I do too. But if you see the right guy at cornerback, that's not the guy you pass up, because the Ravens are very thin there right now.
right? And I think there's two guys that you really want to look at, and I'm sure the Ravens have already looked at and will continue to do so. The first one that I think is a round one pick is Auburn corner Roger McCreary. He's 6 foot, 190, so pretty good size. Just watching him, he has very good man coverage skills, whether it be press or off. He has really excellent instincts. He just, I wrote down, great reactive athleticism. He can convert what he sees to his physical execution, which is very, mm-hmm. I mean, it seems simple, but it is very hard to do. He's top-tier ball skills, strong tackler, very smart. His best game was against Alabama in the Iron Bowl, where he just contests the catch point so well. And even if he's quote-unquote behind on a route, he never gives up. He knows, he doesn't just flail at the ball. He has a plan. You know, he knows what he's doing. The other guy who I think could be that, what I call that hash corner hybrid safety, the Tyrann Mathieu role, is Washington's Trent McDuffie, who's about the same size, 5'11", 195, again, coming from a long line of successful Washington defensive backs. He has the prototypical quick trigger of those Washington players, like a Buda Baker or Marcus Peters, mm-hmm. you know. Excellent, excellent motor. Doesn't ever stop. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to say, I really do want to get into the draft with you, Mike, and this is, you're obviously very done about this, but let's yeah. talk about this when it's time to talk draft. For this show, we're really looking back at 2021 and what the Ravens might do notionally okay. in terms of, hey, they might use a draft pick or whatever, but we certainly have you on for a draft show, Mike. This is, I'm looking forward to it already. If you want to do cornerbacks, you're welcome to do it.
Sounds good.
Outstanding. Let's talk about the various things they could do. Do you see a likelihood the Ravens might sign a free agent of some sort this offseason?
I don't, just because they have so many of their own free agents and the cap space. I feel like, I think I tweeted this during the week, where they generally don't make plays for big UFAs. Mm-hmm. And generally, a corner is a very expensive position. So I don't think so. I mean Jimmy Smith technically is a free agent, but I know we're not talking about him.
I'm talking about the local free agents.
No.
So I don't see him going after a big name, period. I don't think at any position, although I could be surprised by that, and they'll go out and get alignment. That would be the place I would expect it to be. Where I think the Ravens might possibly make a move is an inexpensive slot corner that they like somewhere else in the league. So it'd be a Corey Graham type deal, a couple million, $2.5 million kind of thing. Not a big money deal. And again, could well come out of the bargain bin later on after the draft is all determined. A lot of yeah. you know, free agency that occurs then is certainly the Ravens' time. Michael, we got to say goodbye on this. Really appreciate having you on. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
It was my pleasure, and thanks again for having me, Ken. You can see me on Twitter at MikeFastNFL, and you can read me on Baltimore Sports and Life.
All right, terrific. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do a film study short this offseason, all I demand is that people be passionate about some topic and be fairly narrow. We'll get into depth in 25 minutes. If you want to do a series of episodes, that can be done as well. But so I don't want to, we're not doing one episode on what's wrong with Greg Roman. That's too complex a topic for that. So I want you to go into some detail on that. So just give you an idea of what I'm really looking for this offseason. But that said, happy to have you on the show and to have an open mic and a platform to talk. Mike, thanks again for coming on this time. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.